In April this year, I had the pleasure of representing this congregation at the official opening of the new building next door, 118 St. Stephen's Green, as it's now called. The €95 million development marks an important new chapter in the Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland's more than two-century presence on St. Stephen's Green. The RCSI describes itself as an innovative, world-leading international health sciences university and research institution. At the opening, the Minister for Higher Education, Research, Innovation and Science, James Lawless TD, said, "This landmark development represents a significant investment from RCSI in health sciences, education and in the collaborative environment needed to deliver new insights and innovations. This new facility will help ensure that Ireland remains a leader in health sciences, education and discovery." The RCSI and this Unitarian Church have been located on the west side of Stephen's Green since the 1800s. The college since 1806 at its original headquarters at 123, and the church since 1863. Our relationship as neighbours for 163 years has been very cordial, and we expect that relationship to prosper even further now that we have become next door neighbours. Relationships between scientific and religious bodies haven't always been so harmonious. In the centenary year of the installation of the Wilson Window, our dear departed friend Barbara Wright gave an address called Priestley and the Wilson Window. In it, she spoke about Joseph Priestley, an English dissenting minister who was one of the discoverers of oxygen and a founder of chemical research. Priestley was deeply committed to the spread of intellectual enlightenment, believing that it would defeat superstition and advance political liberty. For his troubles, he was born out of his home in Birmingham by a reactionary church and king mob. Referring to the window, Barbara said that it was the only stained glass window in any church that she knew of that included a representation of a scientist. Given the historic tensions between science and religion, it is indeed unusual to see such a representation in a church. However, Unitarians have a long and deep association with rational thinking and scientific innovation, and out of all proportion to their numbers, they have played prominent roles in different fields of the Enlightenment. Barbara referred to Priestley's involvement in that hothouse for Enlightenment ideas, the Lunar Society. Jenny Uglow's book, The Lunar Men, The Friends Who Made a Future, is well worth looking up and reading. I'm sure that when it comes to forming an opinion on matters of public health policies, most of you, like me, will seek out and follow the rational, science-based medical advice rather than the advice or instructions issued from the pulpits of churches or the pulpits of social media. I have to say, it's depressing to watch the USA sliding backwards as science is ridiculed and attacked, and public health policy is now being determined by a combination of quackery and religion. We shouldn't sneer too much. There are still women in this country paying the price for decades of the highest qualifications in medicine, playing a subordinate role to minor qualifications, particular brands of theology. My belief in and support for the scientific rational approach to medicine may jar somewhat with my choice for the title of this address, which is taken from Psalm 100 of the King James Bible. "Enter into his gates with thanksgiving and into his courts with praise." You pass them on the way in each time you come into the building. Despite, or perhaps because of its location, the large two-panel window just before the top of the stairs seldom attracts much attention from people entering or leaving the church. This is a pity, as the window has some very interesting historical connections. Emblazoned down the panels of the window are the words, "Enter into his gates with thanksgiving and into his courts with love." And across the bottom of the window are the words, "1868, presented by Travers R. Blackley." Travers Blackley was baptised in our old Strand Street Presbyterian meeting house in 1801. The name Travers appears as a forename or a middle name across generations in the Blackley family tree, and with very good reason. Travers Blackley was given the same forename as his maternal grandfather, Travers Hartley, denoted Dublin MP. Hartley, who was the first president of the Dublin Chamber of Commerce, was a member and trustee of our Cook Street Meeting House. He, in turn, was named after his maternal grandfather, Reverend Elias Travers. Elias, the son of an English nonconformist minister, entered the ministry in Ireland in 1669 and was a minister to the Cook Street congregation in Dublin from 1691 until his death in 1705. As such, the Blackley window is a connection back to the earliest years of our congregation. The donor of the window, Travers Blackley, studied medicine and was admitted as a member of the Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland in 1827. He is just one of several connections that this congregation has to the RCSI and to the field of medical science and the promotion of the highest standards in medical practice and patient care. The 12th of May 2020 was both International Nurses Day and the 200th anniversary of the birth of Florence Nightingale. It had been my hope that to coincide with these events, I might deliver an address at a Sunday service in May that year and dedicate it to the medical and nursing professions. Alas, at that time, the country had entered lockdown, the doors of the church were closed, and the caring and health professions were being run off their feet. The planned address was to open with a few words on the Wilson Memorial window and the panel love represented by the image of Florence Nightingale nursing the sick and wounded. The body of the address, however, was going to be made up of some brief biographies of former members of the Stephen's Green congregation who dedicated themselves to caring for their patients and to improving public health. Since then, however, I've confirmed three other important congregational connections to the RCSI in particular and to public health in general. In the year before delivering her address on Priestley, Barbara Wright penned an obituary of her close friend Stephanie Saville, which appeared in issues of The Guardian and The Irish Times in July 2018. In the obituaries, Barbara said that Stephanie had witnessed and participated in huge changes in medical practice throughout her career as an anaesthetist and that she had set an example for other female doctors to follow. Stephanie was born in Dublin to Cyril and Evelyn Saville. There's a small plaque on the panel next to the organ acknowledging Cyril's gift of the organ slides to the church, and there's a memorial plaque to Evelyn in the porch. Stephanie studied medicine at Trinity College, and following her graduation in 1949, she was appointed as an anaesthetist at the Royal City of Dublin Hospital, which we probably know as Bagot Street. A role model for many female junior hospital doctors, she held positions in England and New York before going back to London and establishing herself at St. Bartholomew's Hospital and being appointed to Westminster Hospital as the senior registrar. From there, she helped to set up the intensive therapy unit at the hospital, introduce epidurals as a regular practice in labour, and was also to the forefront of those who hastened the development of anaesthetics for pain relief. Stephanie remained in contact with the congregation here in Dublin, and when St. Luke's Church of Ireland Parish on the Coombe closed in 1977, she purchased its lectern and gifted it to this church, the one which has been read from every Sunday. The small plaque on the front of it records her marriage in 1965 to Thomas Atherton. Dennis Aylmer's ancestor, Dr. Thomas Wrigley Grimshaw, and his wife Sarah, the daughter of Reverend Thomas Felix Thomas, minister of the Eustace Street congregation, are remembered on a memorial plaque on the left-hand side of the church down here, at the east wall. They had 9 sons and 3 daughters, and 2 of their sons and a daughter died in childhood. And one of them, Christopher, is remembered down here next to the pulpit. 2 of their other sons, Cecil and Ewing, were killed in the First World War. Dr. Grimshaw was admitted as a licentiate of the Royal College of Surgeons in 1862 and continued his surgical training at Sir Patrick Dunne's Hospital and Dr. Stephen's Hospital. He was a member of the Statistical Society of Ireland and was appointed as president of that body in 1888. As a statistician, he brought a scientific data-based approach to presenting evidence in support of proposals to address the major public health issues of the day. Among his many published medical articles were articles on the relationship between the geography of Dublin and the outbreaks of cholera in the city. Dr. Grimshaw was one of the founders of the Dublin Sanitary Association and of the Dublin Artisans Dwelling Company. He presented papers setting out statistics that demonstrated why Dublin Corporation should clear areas of slum buildings for the Artisan Dwelling Company to build new dwellings. He later presented evidence to show how disease rates in these new dwellings were far lower than in comparable areas in the rest of the city. Grimshaw was appointed as Registrar General for Ireland in 1879, and in his 21 years in that office, he improved the procedures for the collection of comprehensive and accurate data relating to births, deaths and marriages, and census information. He was dedicated to his work and remained at his post up to a few days before his death in January 1900. In addition to his professional work, Dr. Grimshaw dedicated a lot of time and effort to the support of several Dublin charities. His philanthropic work is recognised on a Dublin tourism plaque situated at his former home in Dawson Street. Situated high on the east side of the church is a trefoil memorial window dedicated to a great woman, Margaret Huxley. The window was a gift to the church from her great friend, the artist Sarah Porser. And we actually have a copy of the receipt, £48, to have that window made and installed. A Londoner, Margaret Huxley commenced her long and distinguished career at St. Bartholomew's in London before coming to Dublin in 1883 to take up the post of matron at the Ioneer Hospital. Within a year, she was appointed as matron of that great old Dublin institution, St. Patrick Dunne's Hospital. The history of that hospital records that, within a very short time of Miss Huxley's arrival, a new era of hospital nursing began. As part of her pioneering work, Miss Huxley established St. Patrick Dunne's School of Nursing as the leading nursing school in Ireland. Through this school, she continually strove to raise the educational standard of nurses and the status of nursing in Ireland and abroad. Unsurprisingly then, she was a leading light and president of the Irish Nurses Association. In her retirement years, Miss Huxley put her considerable talent in supporting the practical efforts of members of this congregation to relieve the Dublin housing crisis. Funds were raised and a site secured on Cork Street for the building of 10 family homes. The Crescent of Houses opened in 1927. It was named Huxley Crescent in her honour. Miss Huxley died in January 1940, and at her memorial service in this church, Reverend Saville Hicks said, "She leaves with all who knew her intimately the memory of a very wonderful personality, a brilliant organiser, a grimly determined fighter of abuses, the most generous of friends, the kindliest and most dignified of teachers. She belonged to the best type of the Victorian age produced in its golden prime. Above all, those of us who knew her best will always associate the memory of a personality of a quite exceptional sweetness and understanding, one who was incapable of an unjust or ungenerous act, one whose word was her bond, and one, above all, whose simplest and quietest expressions of judgment or opinion seemed in some way to carry with them a whole weight of her tremendously forceful character." George Hugh Kidd graduated as a licentiate of the Royal College of Surgeons in 1842 and received a gold medal from Edinburgh University in 1845 for his thesis on vaccination, its protective power, and the proof of the necessity of revaccination. He started as an assistant physician at the Coombe Hospital and eventually rose to becoming the master of the Coombe for the 7-year term of office from 1876 to 1873. He is credited introducing antiseptic practice into the hospital and greatly improving the outcomes of births for mothers and their babies. Sensitive to the needs of children with intellectual disabilities, he was a co-founder and initial organiser of what later became known as Stuart's Hospital. Kidd occupied many prestigious positions, including the office of the president of the RCSI. He was a trustee of the Strand Street Meeting House and one of the original 5 trustees of this building here. George Kidd's nephew, Frederick William Kidd, was born in 1857 in Antrim. In 1888, he married Anne Crozier in First Presbyterian Church in Uri. The minister of the church and the celebrant of the marriage was her father, Reverend John Crozier. Both of her grandfathers were also ministers, Reverend William Crozier at Clonmel and one of the giants of Unitarianism, Reverend Henry Montgomery at Dunmurry. Frederick Kidd was a professor of midwifery and gynaecology in the Royal College of Surgeons and, like his uncle, served a 7-year term as the master of the Coombe. Also like his uncle, he was a trustee of this building and of several congregational funds. I'm not aware of his uncle, you, being the sporting type, but Frederick Kidd played rugby for Lansdowne and was capped for Ireland 3 times. His 3 sons, George, John and William, all served in the Great War. William was killed in France and was remembered on our war memorial in the porch. Richard Carmichael was a Dublin-born surgeon, medical reformer and benefactor. He was licensed by the Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland, rising to become a president of the college on 3 separate occasions, 1813, 26 and 45. He was appointed surgeon of the Lock Hospital Dublin, where his knowledge of venereal disease earned him an international reputation. From 1816 to 1836, he served as a surgeon to the Richmond Hospital, where on the 1st of January 1847, he assisted in the first operation in Ireland to be performed under general anaesthetic. A leading figure in medical education and reform and a distinguished teacher, he was a principal founder of the Richmond Hospital School, where he lectured in surgery, anatomy and physiology, and was the principal for 2 years. Carmichael bequeathed £10,000 to the school and £3,000 in trust to the RCSI for essay prizes on medical education and reform. He died in a drowning accident in 1849, and the school was renamed the Carmichael School of Anatomy, Medicine and Surgery in his memory. A new school building opened with the same name in 1863, just a few months after this church opened. At the opening ceremony, one of the speakers remarked in the course of his address that Richard Carmichael had been educated as a member of the established church. About the year 1825, he changed the opinions in religion which he had been brought up in and joined the Strand Street Congregation of Unitarian Christians. I venture to mention this not because I share the sentiments which led to this change, but because I think that the circumstances speak strongly of the character of the individual, for I maintain that the history of our own profession in Dublin affords no nobler example than Richard Carmichael of a resolute determination to risk and, if necessary, to sacrifice his worldly prospects on what he believed to be the sacred altar of heavenly truth. The school building still stands and is known nowadays as the Carmichael Centre. Our records show that the congregation was presented with a gift of 3 plaster busts in the 1900s of 2 former ministers, Reverend James Martineau and James Armstrong, and also at the same time, one of Richard Carmichael. There is a photograph of 2 ministers holding the busts downstairs on the foil. When reading over a draft of this address, I had some concern that it might sound to the listeners like just a recital of a list of names and dates. And in a way it is and has to be. But the named people were committed members of this congregation. Consider for a moment their achievements and the pioneering roles that they played. A president of the Irish Nurses Association, presidents and professors of the Royal College of Surgeons, masters of the Coombe Hospital, founder of Stewart's Hospital, a founder of the Richmond Medical School, and the inspiration and driving forces behind improvements to public housing and public health. They are remembered in numerous places around the city, and I feel that they are worthy of an acknowledgement here today. In acknowledging them, we should also acknowledge the members of today's congregation who walk are retired from working in our health services. The thread of this address can be traced back to the window panel, Discovery and Science. But it is the other panels on each side of inspiration that have made the benefits of science available to us. Truth, work, and above all, love. Amen.